The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to this recording of the American College of Osteopathic Internists Internal Medicine Board Review Course. The course was held in Baltimore at the Marriott Waterfront Hotel on May 8th through 12th, 2019. The course featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of importance to the internist preparing for initial certification or for recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. HIV/AIDS is presented by Dr. Gerald Blackburn.
The epidemic was described in, or the HIV, not known as HIV at the time, was first reported in June of 1981 and out of Los Angeles. And so what do you think the report was of this outbreak of this new entity in the gay population in Los Angeles? And so what do you think the response was? Well, one, in Michigan, it was no biggie. It's L.A. We don't have to worry about it. And the other response, which we should not be proud of, was they deserve it. And you heard that time and time again. And so that was 1981, and I'll cover some of this. And the public, for the most part, just put that on the back burner until Life magazine, which doesn't exist anymore, published these photos of what a normal, healthy, vibrant young man looks like in 1990 before he contracted HIV. And that's what he looked like right before he died. And it brought home to the public that this could be anyone. This could be your brother. This could be you. Your mother, your son, your whatever. So it's not just about the individual, it's about the impact on the entire family. And here's a stat. So we've come a long ways, but not that far. There's still 1 million people infected with HIV in this country. You folks will be taking care of them. You folks will be diagnosing them. You folks will be involved in preventing secondary spread. And 1 out of 7 in this country don't know they're positive. So that's where a lot of the work is being done right now. And it is said that only 1/3 of those under treatment have adequate treatment who are virally suppressed. Maybe more importantly, there's 37,000 new cases every year in this country. And there's 38,000 that will present with an opportunistic infection, meaning not only have they been infected a long time and with transmission, but also that they have all these issues and they'll be hitting the ER and you'll be seeing them. And if you don't think about it, you'll miss that diagnosis, at least some of the time. It's also a illness of the population over 50 now, which is sort of crazy in that we used to think of it as young, sexually active individuals, drug abusers. Half of those folks are now over the age of 50, and in another 10 years, it'll be 3/4 will be over the age of 50. And it is believed that this infection, maybe simply because of chronic inflammation, but probably not, but also the impact on the immune system, accelerates or increases the number of individuals with all the illnesses that happens when you get old. The list is there. It's now estimated that it entered the human population somewhere around 1920, and it took all this time to show up in Los Angeles in 1981. And for it to show up in 1981, given the normal duration of illness until you get sick, of approximately 11 years, this means it was in this country, or it was in parts of this country, probably around 1970. And it started showing up in 1981. The first effective treatment, well, backing up. So here's this illness that's been here since 1970, being diagnosed in 1981, and there was no blood test. We didn't even know what was causing it. And we had no blood test. So if in 1981 or 82 or 83, if you came in for a surgery, the last thing you'd want is a blood transfusion. And but some people actually needed a blood transfusion, and we actually started seeing people who were transfused with HIV-positive blood, of which the rate of infection was probably over 90% if you were transfused. And now they're in the 80s, 1980s, or early 90s. They have this disease with this horrible stigma, and all they had was surgery. And we have nothing to offer them. So some of the milestones were 1981, first case in LA, and that was the June report. Not our problem, we're in Michigan. Our hospital saw the first case of HIV in September of 1981. So it wasn't California. And we had, and she's still out there. There's this nut job orthopedic surgeon, you know, who I don't know if we've ever talked about that, who was out there saying, we have the right as an orthopedic surgeon to test these people, now that we had a blood test in 1985, and if they're positive, not treat them. An orthopedic surgeon, and she's still out there. That's another story. 1985, the testing became available, but there was really no good treatment till 1996. So before 1996, the good news is I know what you have. You're HIV positive. The bad news is I have nothing to offer you. And so I went from a specialty who, the thing I liked the most about infectious disease was I could cure people. And then HIV became part of my life. And not only could I not cure you, I actually had very little to offer you other than basically palliative care till 1995 or 96. And in 1996, I have something that will help you. All you have to take, you, a young, previously healthy person who's never taken medication, all you have to do is take somewhere between 18 and 24 pills a day. And it's going to make you feel like crap. And it's going to give you diarrhea. And it's going to upset your stomach. And your life is going to revolve around these 18 to 25 pills a day at a cost of between $25,000 and $35,000 a year. That was 1996. So here's sort of the natural course of untreated HIV. If you go to the far left of this, the viral load is in the red, and the CD4 count is in the blue. So when you're first infected, your viral load goes very, very high, and your CD4 count takes a hit. Untreated, you'll sort of come back to a baseline for you. And so once you get through this initial infection, your body partially controls it for the next 8 to 10 years on average, but not forever. And at that point, as you move to the right-hand side of this, the viral load takes off and the CD4 count starts to plummet. And these were the folks that we were so worried about transmitting the infection, because look at that viral load at the end of life. And we were worried about this being the problem with transmission. Turns out we were wrong. These folks are too sick to transmit anything. These folks are so sick, some of them, you'd make rounds and they'd be in the bathroom with constant diarrhea that you could not treat, and on and on and on. These were untreatable, dying patients that all we had to offer was palliative care, basically. So that's the sort of the curve that you look at if you are not treated. The test questions could easily be on the so-called acute retroviral syndrome, which is basically just another in a young, usually, but not always, sexually active, usually, individual who just has a viral illness, often described as identical to acute mono. Rash, sore throat, adenopathy, chills, myalgia, and they would go to their doctor and they'd do a mono spot, and it would be negative, but they'd still get labeled as, oh, you just have mono. See ya. Or they may present as an aseptic meningitis. Oh, it's just a viral meningitis. You'll get better. And they do, without treatment. And if you were to test them for HIV, by the old testing, they would be probably negative. The new testing is pretty good. Within 10 days, you'll convert. So it's sort of in this box on the left. For up to 10 days, you're HIV antibody negative, or P24 antigen negative. After about 10 to 14 days, you should pick up a positive test. So I won't go into all the diagnose, because that changes and it varies from place to place, but do remember 10 to 14 days, your testing should be positive. Your initial screening should be positive. If I were to throw out a test question, though, it might be something along this line. The clues to possible untreated and often advanced HIV. Anytime you walk down the hallway and hear good doctors say, boy, that's a bizarre presentation of whatever the common illness, think about HIV. What about pneumococcal bacteremia? Pneumococcal pneumonia, we see that in young people, but if they're bacteremic, think about HIV. And as Dr. Deary and I think both mentioned, Salmonella, Shigella, Campylobacter, bacteremia, it is seen in non-HIV individuals, but much more commonly in HIV positive. Severe recurrent thrush. One of my patients from long ago had to ask her OB-GYN doctor to please test her because she had so many episodes of vaginal candidiasis. And she had turned out she had been diagnosed with mono in college. Any presentation of an unusual illness. When your older, experienced docs say, boy, I've never seen this before. Think about HIV. Uncommon diseases, cryptococcal meningitis, or the worst case of blank that I ever saw. Name it. Worst case of thrush, the worst case of chickenpox, the worst case of whatever. Think about HIV. TB, because there's a correlation with those two. And also any other STD. So the CD4 count, which is your life revolves around CD4 count and viral load if you're HIV positive. They will ask you, and they have asked you, what is this illness, and tie it into what the CD4 count is. So CD4 counts through these slides are sort of, what if it's above 500, that's what we all get. Because the immune system is pretty good at 500. But as it drops down, you start thinking about other illnesses. And some of this I'll be talking about. So as most of you know, you think about PCP or PJP, pneumocystis, under 200. If you have pneumonia and it's above 200, generally you think about pneumococcus. Below 200, PJP. CD4 count below 100, think about CMV illness. And below 50, MAC, or Mycobacterium avium complex. And those questions will be built around the CD4 count. These are the AIDS-defining malignancies in the face of a positive HIV. antibody? I would have never had a clue what that was. But New England Journal, and it's Kaplan's disease sarcoma. But not only these AIDS-defining malignancies, but other cancers are much more common in HIV-positive individuals. 20 times more likely to occur in HIV for lung cancer if you're a smoker. So if you have an HIV individual who smokes, they're just killing themselves, literally. And I have patients that either cannot or will not stop. And I've had this discussion many times, and you walk in the room, and you all know the patient, where the entire room just reeks of cigarette smoke, and they can't stop. So the 200 to 500 would be pulmonary TB. Below 200, you start thinking about extrapulmonary TB or the inability to form cavities if you have TB. As I mentioned, pneumococcal pneumonia, at least that's the answer on the boards. Shingles, all these other things we've all seen in otherwise healthy patients or normal patients, but much more common in HIV. And this list is for the 200 to 500. And under 200 is this list, which I do not have to read to you. They might show you photographs of the eye grounds, patients who are not treated, who now they're having visual problems. On the left is a typical CMV retinitis. And on the right, toxoplasmosis. Cryptococcal meningitis, as I mentioned, not only HIV, but T-cell deficiencies. Still common, we still see people come in the ER with these diffuse pulmonary infiltrates, never sick before. They've had trouble breathing for anywhere from a few days for a week or two. Take that x-ray, that is screaming HIV-related PJP until proven otherwise. How do you make the diagnosis? Well, bronchoscopy, usually with special stains, but they're now getting fancier with PCR, direct fluorescent antibody, and the serum Fungitel is the trade name, which there's some cross-reactivity, but putting it all together. And then the treatment is usually Bactrim. And I'm emphasizing the Bactrim because they'd love to ask you about the side effects of Bactrim. And a reminder that the difference, in my experience, from the old days to the new days of survival with PJP, when they're really sick and hit the ER, steroids. When we first started seeing these folks, when Dr. Deary was about 3 years old, if they came into the ER like this, you would never give them steroids because that's an immunosuppressant, and they're already immunosuppressed. So here's young people, never sick before, hit the ER, can't breathe, and remember, this is before treatment was available, and before we were giving steroids. And it would be, well, John, I know you're 22 years old. I know you're having trouble breathing. And let's talk about a ventilator. But the chances of you surviving the ventilator are almost zero. I know you've never met me before. What do you want me to do? What kind of decision are you asking individuals like that to make? So I'd put you on the vent, and I won't be able to get you off. Or I don't put you on the vent, and I'm now telling you you're HIV positive, depending on when the testing was available and all that. And now all I have to offer you is comfort. So it was a brutal disease. still is, once we started giving steroids, we could get them off the vent. So that's a big question if I were writing. But what my spies have told me is multiple questions regarding Bactrim. Remember, it's given intravenously in these patients usually, so there's a fluid overload and all the other things listed here. Know those side effects cold. Remember that HIV is a sexually transmitted disease, so if you got one, look for the others. Syphilis in this instance, and these are some of the classic presentations of untreated HIV. Kaposi's on the left, top right. The worst case, remember I said the worst case of whatever I ever saw, this is worst case of oral or labial herpes. The worst case I ever saw. Wonder if you're HIV. Bacillary angiomatosis. Just saw a case of this presented at a conference. The key question was, does this guy have cats? And the answer was, yes. CMV esophagitis, hairy leukoplakia. If they showed you the pictures, think about this kind of stuff. GI presentations, diarrhea. In the old days with cryptosporidiosis, we had nothing to offer them. These would be the folks who would contract this organism, presumably from animals, in particular, maybe young animals. Some of the early studies were from calves, baby cows. But other animals, the intractable diarrhea that you could not treat. So they actually, at some hospitals, had holes cut through the bed so they could lie there with their diarrhea. And the standard treatment for the non-HIV individual, like peromomycin or Alinea, did not work in the untreated HIV individual. And again, look at the size of the crypto versus cyclospora. A ridiculous question, but I didn't write it. CMV, bloody diarrhea, in those days, on and on and on until you get the HIV under control. Mycobacterium, terrible abdominal pain, bloody diarrhea. You have to get the HIV under control. And then I have several slides here of focal CNS syndromes and the differences between them. The diagnosis of toxo is usually starts with lesions that look like this in a patient who is seropositive, IgG for toxo. Lymphomas, presumably people have challenged this, but believed to be due to Epstein-Barr virus of the CNS in a patient who is immune compromised. PML, no treatment. There's a few things out there in the literature they're looking at, but effectively no treatment. And PCR for JC virus positive. What about prophylaxis? Still on the boards. Maybe we don't all do PPDs anymore, but we're not the guys writing the questions. So if you are HIV positive, you would prophylax if you had a PPD greater than 5, or if you had a positive QuantiFERON. Although QuantiFERON is not the end-all, it may be better than the usual PPD. Excuse me. And there's the prophylaxis that is standard protocol, although not the only protocols. Clinical course. The viral load really is all about contagiousness and the impact that it has on your CD4 count and your immune system. And think of being infected with HIV is like your brand new car nearly totaled on the way home from the airport, and you get in a bad accident, and you take your car in, And when you get back, it looks just like the brand new car you had before the accident. But once you sit in that seat, it doesn't drive the same way. It doesn't handle the same way. That's HIV. Once you have hit your immune system, you are never back to normal. You're almost, many parameters are much improved, but your immune system is never back to normal. The inflammatory markers never return to normal. So even on the best of therapy, you are still not quite pre-car accident shape. And then as we control the viral load with our medications, we control the CD4 lymphocyte count. And all the comments I just made about your immune system never being quite normal, so you are always at risk. You can live a normal lifespan, but the odds of you developing a malignancy or a heart disease or whatever of aging are greater if you're infected, even well controlled, than if you're not. Who to treat? Everybody. Everybody. The current thinking is test them, get your test back. Not everyone agrees with this, but the trend is test and treat. But you've got to have a lot of support people to make that work. And what happens when you do that? Well, you decrease transmission, because it's not that the people at the end of their life that are transmitting it, it's the newly infected people with the high viral load that don't even know they're infected. And they're young and sexually active and on and on. So there's several studies now that basically say if you're undetectable, you're no longer at risk of transmitting. Undetectable equals untransmissible. So this is not only are you benefiting the individual, but you're also helping to shut down transmission. HIV in pregnancy, up to 33% transmission if you are HIV positive and are not on treatment and you deliver a baby. And some states, some areas with early detection and treatment have reduced that to zero. And maybe 1 to 3% maybe is acceptable. You could argue zero is what's acceptable. Treatment, this slide is valid for the boards. It may not be entirely valid for what's going on now, but for the boards, three drugs with at least two different classes. And why do I say that? Because there's now two drug regimens, but that would never make it to the boards in the near future. So there's guidelines here on treatment, complicated. I'm certainly not going to read them to you. The treatment or co-infection with Hep B and C is beyond the time I have here. Possible questions to the medications might be hypersensitivity reaction to abacavir, because that's still one of the go-to drugs that's out there. Truvada, maybe renal insufficiency, bone reabsorption, and dolutegravir. That's the newest thing. Maybe it won't be on the boards because the boards haven't caught up with it. But it is said that if a woman conceives while taking dolutegravir, there's an increased incidence of neural tube defects. So that's contraindicated in early pregnancy or thinking about pregnancy. The immune reconstitution syndrome, you're a train wreck, I start you on therapy, and all of a sudden your immune system comes back and as an inflammatory response. So your chest x-ray gets worse. Your visual problems get worse because of the immune reconstitution. That could easily be on the boards. How do you deal with that? Keep going with the HIV therapy and anti-inflammatories. Treatment and prevention, long story. or could be complex, but we talked about that. I start you on therapy. I make your viral load undetectable. You're no longer at risk to the rest of the population. There is this pre and post exposure prophylaxis. I'm just out of time, so I won't talk about that, but here's the potential questions that I see. The acute retroviral syndrome, the immune reconstitution syndrome, I'm telling you the backroom questions will be on there, the correlation of the CD4 count, histology of renal disease. I think our nephrologists are a little bit crazy when they expect you to know all the histopathology of kidneys, but they like to ask this question. So what kind of renal disease do they get? FSGS. Prophylaxis. Steroids, I talked about. Immune deficiency, I talked about with crypto. TB prophylaxis, those are all have been on the boards. And with that, thank you.